good afternoon and welcome to Truth to Power. My name is Alicia Littletree, and today we're going to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the bombing of Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney, the two Earth First activists who were bombed as they drove through Oakland on a Redwood Summer organizing tour 10 years ago, May 24th, 1990. Today we're going to hear a speech by Judy Berry, one of the last that she gave before she died. She spoke in Berkeley, California on May 18th, 1996.
I'm presuming that most of the people here know the basics about the bombing case, and this was going to be like the advanced course. Am I incorrect? Is there people here who don't know the basic stuff about the bombing case? Oh, darn. Well, you know, there's a nice brochure back on the wobbly table, and I would like to ask you to get it. I'll tell you very briefly that in 1990, I was bombed and nearly killed in an obvious assassination attempt. It followed a series of death threats. It went along with my Earth First organizing. But when the Oakland police and the FBI showed up at the bomb scene immediately, rather than investigate this bombing, they arrested me, and Daryl Cherney was traveling with me. They arrested both of us for transporting the bomb that was used to try to kill me. And they said that the bomb was in the back seat and we should have seen it, so we knew we were carrying it. And over there, there's a nice big picture of the hole in the car, which is clearly right under the front seat. And there's more pictures on the back at the wobbly table. And what they'll show is the front seat is blown right through. The back seat is completely intact. These guys knew they were lying. They also said, and this is on the warrant, that they found nails in the bomb that matched nails in my car. And the nails in the bomb turned out to be finishing nails, and the nails in the car turned out to be roofing nails. And they were obviously not identical. The other thing that they didn't tell the media was that this bomb turned out to be triggered by a motion device, by a ball bearing that had to roll to connect two contact points. So this was an anti-personnel bomb hidden under my car seat, triggered by the motion of my car, but they claimed that I was transporting it to use in some sabotage action. I'm not exactly sure what. Anyway, so that's kind of the basis. For 8 weeks, they spread it all over the country that we were terrorists who had blown ourselves up with our own bomb, but they found nothing at all to link us to the bomb. In fact, everything went the other way. So the charges were kind of quietly dropped. They've never actually even been officially dropped. They just decided not to pursue them. And the FBI went on and conducted an investigation of Earth First instead of an investigation of the bombing. And as Karen stated, obviously the bomber's still at large. That was the quickest job I ever did on that. Anyway. As we've been doing this lawsuit, we're now up to 14,000 pages in the record of this lawsuit. You want to talk about running out of brain K-powers, trying to learn a new song, Robert? Try absorbing 14,000 pages of testimony and files. We're definitely at the top of my ability levels here. But I'm still struggling and keeping up with it. And they've been dribbing and drabbing out more stuff as the discovery period of the lawsuit, which is when they're supposed to show us all the documents and we get to depose them or question them under oath. As this has come to a close, we've been battling them over huge amounts of documents that they haven't given us and things that they crossed out that they didn't have a right to. And as we've been making, these are called a motion to compel, saying to compel them to give us the stuff, and they've been making something called a motion to protect, saying no, we don't have to give it to you. So we've been having all these little court skirmishes, and they've been giving us more and more information, and the information that we've been getting recently have really helped me understand the larger picture of how the FBI works, not just against Earth First and not just against Daryl and me, but also against activists in general. What I want to focus on tonight is the way that the FBI and the police target activists for free speech activities. And unfortunately, that is what is happening and still going on, very widespread in our country. The operation that the FBI does when they spy on the activists and everything is called COINTELPRO, Counterintelligence Program. And this was initiated under J. Edgar Hoover way back in the bad old days, which are the same as the new days. But anyway, in the bad old days, they were very blatant about it. They were very open. They called it COINTELPRO. They wrote memos about it. They said what they were going to do. And one of the famous memos describing the COINTELPRO program, J. Edgar Hoover describes it as a program to, I wrote this down, expose, misdirect, isolate, and otherwise neutralize activists, progressive activists, and to destroy what they stand for. So that's exactly what the FBI does and always has done. But and I'm not going to go into too much of the history. Again, some of that is in this brochure in the back. But I do want to say that one of the best-known targets of COINTELPRO, of course, was the Black Panthers. And the kind of techniques that they use in COINTELPRO include infiltration and surveillance and agent provocateurs and fomenting infighting by using false information and targeting leaders for framing and assassination. And these are all very well documented in very, very many books and et cetera. This is not paranoia or anything like that. But what I want to just give you an example of what COINTELPRO was like when we could see COINTELPRO, because now they hide it. So I want to talk about the Black Panthers for just a minute. So the kind of operations that were done against the Black Panthers, and Richard Held, the same man from my case, was a very key operative, and what I'm going to show you is his individual work. And that is that one of the things they did was they fomented infighting by sending nasty cartoons back and forth between different factions. I'm just going to give you a look. Here's a couple of the cartoons, and this one has got Karenga, who's from United Slaves, a rival black nationalist organization that they tried to foment infighting, and he's got a little naked Geronimo on his sword, and he's saying, "Now, Geronimo, who are you calling a pork chop nigger?" And that was so when the Panthers got this, they believed it was from Karenga, okay? And then Karenga believed that the responses were from the Panthers, and they were all from the FBI. And then this one has got a different Panther named Long John abusing a child, saying, "Panthers are big and brave, snatching defenseless kids." Actually, it was his own child that he had, quote-unquote, snatched. But the FBI knew this, but they did this to cause infighting, and they did. One other thing, in the course, they also sent death threats, and what I want to say is this might help put some of the death threats we got into perspective, because they're really artistic, you know? I kind of wonder about this Richard Held guy. Does he draw, you know? So, you know, here's some of the death threats. Well, there's the most famous one, the rifle scope and crosshairs one of me. And here's some other artistic wonders, the stompers with their little stomper boots. And then there's Humboldt and Mendocino County, welcome dirt first to Mississippi summer. So there was a whole series, and I've never gotten death threats before or after this. It was a campaign of death threats that all came in a three-week period before the bombing. And it looks very different from 6 years later than it looked at the time. But on the death threats, so now we have no idea who sent me the death threats. We don't know if they came from the FBI or the timber industry or spontaneous or what, just a lot of artistic loggers. But back in the old days, they used to talk about their death threats. They had memos in the FBI where they would describe the death threats. So this is an example of what they would do. This just shows how duplicitous they are. This is describing a Black Panther death threat, and this is the, you know, thing asking for permission to it. And what they're going to do is they're going to send a death threat to David Hilliard, but it's actually directed at Huey Newton, and because they're going to do this to foment infighting. Huey Newton was the chairman, and David Hilliard was, I'm not sure, one chief of staff, right? Actually, Huey was eventually the supreme servant, but at any rate, that was a later title. So anyway, this is what the FBI says about this death threat. "First, it is hoped that by forwarding the letter to Hilliard, as opposed to Newton himself, a measure of Hilliard's loyalty to Newton may be more properly assessed. If sources in San Francisco are able to determine that Hilliard in fact turned the letter over to Newton, then it can be assured that efforts that can be assumed that efforts to drive a wedge between Hilliard and Newton could prove futile. If, on the other hand, Hilliard chooses to keep the contents of the letter to himself and fails to warn Newton of the impending danger the letter reflects, then it therefore would be deemed appropriate to direct further counterintelligence efforts towards polarizing these two individuals. Secondly, if in fact Hilliard does make Newton aware of the letter's contents, then it may further add to Newton's paranoia and fear for his life, which would serve to demean his effectiveness both as a leader of the Black Panther Party and a public figure. Thirdly, by enclosing a printed card from U.S., United Slaves, the one that Karenga was the head of, implying that the letter and that a contract on Huey's life was initiated by United Slaves, this, it was felt, would aid in furthering the animosity already existing between these two groups, and the resulting paranoia, namely fear of each other, would then serve to lessen both groups' effectiveness as black in the black community, and that both the Black Panther Party and us would have to institute time-consuming programs designed toward self-defense. So, I mean, these guys are like really, you know, slimy. Anyway, so here's the death threat. Mr. David Hilliard, although I sympathize with the Black Panther Party movement, at this point money is more important, and Karenga has money. I have an unscheduled appointment with your leader, Huey P. Newton, and for $3,000 I will keep any appointment. I'm writing to tell you that I admire your leadership and don't think Huey deserves to take over after you built the party up to what it is. I only hope that when I have my meet that you are not around, or if you are, you won't get in my way. So those are the kind of documents that were going around, and you know, I mean, people didn't have any idea that this kind of sophisticated psychological operation was being used on them, and it did cause paranoia and it did cause infighting. So that's kind of a taste of what COINTELPRO is. The reason we know about COINTELPRO is because in 1971, the Black Panthers got tired of this shit. 32 Panthers were killed, including, of course, the most famous one being Fred Hampton in Chicago, who was murdered in his bed set up by the FBI. Again, with the assistance of Richard Held's daddy, Richard G. Held. Anyway, but so they, in 1971, the Panthers got sick of this, and they broke into the FBI office in, or somebody, I don't know who, somebody broke into the FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania, and liberated the files. And so that's how come we have these uncrossed out documents that describe these things. And they've got tons and tons of files, and they describe the COINTELPRO program. And as a result of it, there were public hearings held in the U.S. Senate in 1975, the Church Committee, the Senate, Senator Church led it. And in that committee, they decided that COINTELPRO violated basic rights of activists. And as a result of these hearings and this exposure of COINTELPRO, they passed what's now called the Attorney General Guidelines, and these have been in the news recently relation to the counterterrorism bill. They're trying to erode these guidelines with their new counterterrorism bill. But one thing that's still in, even after the revisions, something that's still in these guidelines is really comes into bear in my case. And that is these rules. The basic rule in the counterterrorism guidelines says that the FBI is not allowed to investigate people for political activity. They're not allowed to investigate free speech activities. They're only allowed to investigate crimes. And, you know, even being in the same group as somebody who commits a crime, that's called freedom of association. You have to actually commit a crime for the FBI to be able to investigate you. And the only exception is if they can prove that your group is a terrorist enterprise. And they have to go through all this rigmarole of requesting permission and proving after 90 days that they found evidence and stuff like that. So under normal circumstances, the FBI is not allowed to investigate a group like Earth First. Okay, they're not allowed to carry on these broad-based investigations. And what I've been learning in my own case more and more as I've gotten more information is, of course, that that's exactly what they've been doing. Wait, now, this is going to take me a minute. I've got to sort these papers out. I knew I'd have trouble without a table in front of me because this was... Okay, okay, so what I want to do is talk about what have they done in Earth First. Now, Earth First was founded in 1981. Now, this is, they claim that they aren't investigating Earth First as a group, and they claim that they never have, right? Well, the first FBI document I have on Earth First, and this didn't come from my files, it came from somebody else's, is dated December 1982, okay, only 1 year afterwards. And this is pretty, the name crossed out here. Isn't this name Daniel Barron, Karen, wherever you are? Yeah, okay, so I'll uncross out the name in my reading. Okay, so it says, on November 29th, 1982, Secretary of the Interior Protection Detail, U.S. Park Police, provided the FBI with an original letter addressed to Secretary Watt, which states in part that Daniel Barron of Earth First, I forewarn you that oil and gas exploration, road building, mining, or any other activity we deem detrimental to the environment or wilderness, wilderness study areas, or national parks will be followed with civil disobedience activities by our group. Signed, Daniel Barron, Earth First. And this is labeled an extortion. Okay, so that's their excuse. They also claim that 1 hour after an attempt was given to give this letter, as Watt departed the Capitol building, the same individual approached James Watt and in a loud voice stated that there would be civil disobedience if actions detrimental to the environment were continued. And that the FBI agent then further advised his office that they have a large file on Earth First, further advised his office that they have a large file on Earth First, which he described as a violence-prone organization operating in the west and southwest portions of the United States. So that's the first document I have, 1982. And they don't take long to keep on going with this. They said that they began to investigate Earth First, and they discovered that their informant stated that as a matter of background in 1960, this is another 1982 document, a follow-up on that one. As a matter of background, in 1967, an individual named Edward Abbey wrote a book called The Monkey Wrench Gang, which dealt with environmental groups who would resort to violence in order to preserve the existing environment. And this informant indicated that since that time, the Earth First organization has rallied around Edward Abbey, and Abbey is now associated with that organization. He stated that the Earth First organization has demonstrated at Glen Canyon Dam, although in a peaceful manner. And the informant also stated that as far as he knows, Earth First has never directly threatened the Salt River Project, which I guess is Glen Canyon Dam people, and that the only reason that they requested the information is that they wanted to start developing an intelligence information regarding Earth First, and then it ends with the words investigation continuing. So, it's a great idea of investigating only crimes. And here's another one. This one's from 1983. Information relating to actual or threatened civil disobedience. Now, what right does the FBI even have to be writing this memo? For information of the FBI, Earth First, the self-proclaimed radical environmental national group, and the Kamiopsis Action Alliance, a local southern Oregon group, have conducted various nonviolent demonstrations aimed at blocking construction of the Bald Mountain Road in Josephine County, Oregon, since April 1983. Protesters from Earth First and the Kamiopsis Action Alliance feel that logging a Bald Mountain Road will hurt the environment. Since April of 1983, six protesters at the construction site of Bald Mountain Road, located 43 miles southwest of Grants Pass, have resulted in work delays and 45 arrests of protesters on minor charges. Tactics have included, ready for this, carrying protest signs, members handcuffing themselves to construction machinery, and protesters placing themselves in the path of heavy machinery in order to block the construction. Over the July 4th weekend, about 250 supporters held a peaceful rally on 5 acres of the Siskiyou National Forest, resulting in, on July 6th, the U.S. District Court continued until July 13th, a restraining order issued against the U.S. Forest Service and the road contractor to halt construction of the Bald Mountain Road. The protests and blockades have been monitored and investigated by the Josephine County Sheriff's Office and also by the U.S. Forest Office. So the FBI says, we're not going to have an active investigation of this, but they're just going to keep their eye on it. So those are the kind of, that's how far back the FBI's monitoring, I'd say targeting of Earth First goes. And of things they have no business even writing a memo on. But the one thing that they brought up there that was very interesting was that they said, well, we're not going to follow up on this because the U.S. Forest Service is following up on it. Because what I've been finding recently is that the FBI, for those of you who work on timber stuff, you know that there's all these California Forest Practices Act, right? And they have all these rules you have to file. And the timber agencies and the timber companies just do this little dance around the rules and manage to cut every tree in the forest. Well, the FBI does the same thing. They do this little dance around the rules. They do indeed acknowledge the Attorney General guidelines, but what they do is they get the local cops to do their dirty work. In 1988, we know that the FBI
began an infiltration operation in Arizona Earth First. And this was not just infiltration. This wasn't, as the FBI says to us, we were just catching people who were committing crimes. No, they weren't. They were creating the crimes in order to frame people. What they did in Arizona was classic, just like what they did in the Black Panthers. They had agent provocateurs infiltrate this group. And two of them in particular, Ron Frazier and Michael Fain, over a two-year period, won the trust of a core group of Earth Firsters and persuaded them to try to take down this power line. Now, interestingly, what the FBI has been doing from the get, including right up to the present with this Unabomber thing, is they've been trying to associate Earth First with bombs. They've been trying to make the public think that we are bombers. So the COINTELPRO against Earth First involved discrediting us by making people think we're terrorist bombers. And there were no bombs involved in the Arizona operation, but the FBI's code name for it, as I've learned from my files, is Operation ThermCon, as in thermite conspiracy. Now, the two agent provocateurs were constantly telling the activists, oh, we can get thermite, we can get thermite, let's use thermite to take down these power lines. Well, they also used the book Eco Defense to show what terrorists we were. Well, if you look up bombs in eco defense, there's only one line about bombs. It says, stay away from bombs. That's all. Bombs have always been outside of the basis of unity, have always been outside the realm of our tactics from day one. And so Earth First didn't want to use bombs. So although the FBI agents tried to get them to use thermite, no thermite was ever used. All they could convince them to do was to saw down the power lines with a blowtorch. And they had to buy the acetylene torch and teach the activists how to use it and drive them to the site, okay, pay for the gas, and choose the site. And I'm sure you've all heard Peg Millett very wonderfully telling her awesome story about how she got away from their 50-man SWAT team in the desert. But at any rate, when they started to cut down this power line, lo and behold, an FBI helicopter arose from the next valley, and they were surrounded, and they were busted. And Dave Foreman was also busted, even though he wasn't there. And there was discovered in the case a tape in which Michael Fain, the undercover agent, had said, well, he isn't really the one we need to bust as far as a perpetrator. We just want to bust Dave Foreman to send a message. Hoo boy, we don't want that on tape. Okay? So obviously what was going on in Arizona was not the FBI busting people for crimes. It was the FBI trying in the manner of COINTELPRO to set people up. And since this power line event consisted of four activists and two FBI agents, I would say that it was a joint Earth First FBI operation and not an Earth First action at all. So I'm now going to skip to 1990, although I would like to mention that in 1988, I didn't know about this until 1990, but in 1988, the first that I know of, COINTELPRO, was done against me as an Earth First activist. And what happened was this man came to a demonstration and staying overnight at Daryl's, and he whips out this Uzi out of his trunk. And, oh, ha, ha, wouldn't it be fun to pose for this Uzi? So we took turns posing in the Patty Hearst pose, thinking this was for our own photo albums, just for a joke. And he placed the gun in my hand, and he arranged it so that the Earth First showed on my T-shirt. And they took a whole roll, most of them I'm laughing, but they got one with a fairly serious picture, and this got sent to the police. And it got sent to the police along with this letter. Dear Chief Keplinger, I joined Earth First to be able to report illegal activities of that organization. Now I went to establish a contact to provide information to authorities. The leader and main force of Earth First, I really wasn't, I just started, in Ukiah is Judy Barry. She is facing a trespassing charge in connection with the Earth First sabotage of a logging road in Caddo Peak area. We built a trench across it, right? She did jail time in Sonoma County for blocking the federal building to support the communist government of Nicaragua. Barry and Ukiah Earth First are planning vandalism directed at Congressman Bosco to protest offshore oil drilling. And that was just one of those fantasy actions where we were sitting around. Said, hey, let's do an oil spill in Congressman Bosco's swimming pool. I mean, it was never a serious thing that anybody ever even thought of doing. It was just a joke. Earth First recently began automatic weapons training. And now this was accompanied by this picture of me with a Uzi. So in 88, the local police thought that I was engaged and Earth First was engaged. So this is interesting. And he then offers to set me up for a marijuana bust, which I don't fall for because I don't... as I've said, I'm stupid enough to pose with Uzis, but not stupid enough to sell marijuana. So so I didn't get busted. But nonetheless, you can see how these COINTELPROs not only work on us, they work on the local police. So that my local police thought I was secretly training with, here's a picture of me, it must be true. At any rate, so, you know, and that's the same year that the FBI infiltrated Earth First in Arizona and that the Operation Thermcon began. So anyway, but skipping to 1990, now I want to talk about what I've learned about the Oakland police. One of the people that we've deposed is a man, the intelligence officer, loosely used term. The intelligence officer from Oakland Police is named Officer Kevin Griswold. And Kevin Griswold testified under oath, and so it must be true, that in 1990, the Oakland Police were monitoring 300 political groups in the Bay Area, approximately 20 of whom were engaged in environmental activities. I didn't know there was 20 groups. And that they also monitored individuals, one of them at least is sitting in this room, and that's Karen Pickett. And that the way that they monitored these groups was he collected newspaper clippings, and he had quite a collection of them, and they were from all over. There was a very interesting select group of newspaper clippings. And that the Oakland Police, not the FBI, the Oakland Police, who are not subject to the Attorney General guidelines about investigating political activities, that they had their own live informants in our groups. And I'm going to presume that this stuff is still going on. They didn't tell us it stopped. And that that Officer Griswold himself often photographed demonstrations, in his words, quote, to record who was there. And that they had a live informant in the environmental movement who provided them with information on Earth First, and that this information did not concern illegal activities or potential illegal activities, but just demonstrations and civil disobedience. And Kevin Griswold, also said that the Oakland Police got information on Earth First, Seeds of Peace, and the Ecology Center from Berkeley Police Officer Steve Engler. So next time y'all get arrested in Berkeley, look at the guy's name tag and remember that name, Steve Engler. But now what do they do with this information? Well, surprise, surprise, the Oakland Police then shares this information with the FBI. And what he says, this is a quote, I just collected the demonstrations that were going on in the Bay Area, and we'd talk about those, meaning him and the FBI. So the FBI is using him as a surrogate to do the operations that they are forbidden to do. He was quite aggressive, this Kevin Griswold, when Earth First hung a banner on the Golden Gate Bridge, quite a terrorist activity, right? Kevin Griswold from the Oakland Police showed up at this location that's halfway between San Francisco County and Marin County. So Kevin Griswold from the Oakland Intelligence Department showed up there. And he, according to his own admission, participated in searching Karen Pickett's and Daryl Cherney's car. And now these cars were impounded. This for a nonviolent civil disobedience. And Karen and Daryl weren't even up on the bridge. They were in an absolutely legal location making press calls. And their cars were impounded and taken to the Oakland Police impounding lot. And while they were searching these cars, they confiscated the materials that they found in them, including Karen Pickett's address book. Well, this address book later shows up in the FBI files, and they're going to do what they call a social network analysis to see who these people are in Karen's address book. So you can see how the FBI gets around these guidelines and does whatever they want to surveil us. Another example of local police complicity in really outrageous activities against Earth First activists and activists in general is the Santa Cruz police. Most of you probably know that sometime in April of 1990, there were some power lines that were once again sawed down, not blown up, in Santa Cruz. And these power lines were taken down by what they called themselves the Earth Night Action Group. And the FBI did indeed initiate a terrorist investigation of the Earth Night Action Group. And they've sworn to us that they were not investigating Earth First, but just Earth Night Action Group. They never managed to catch the people who downed the power lines because they weren't looking for the Earth Night Action Group. They were looking for Earth First. They had no informants in the Earth Night Action Group. They just so happened to have some informants in Earth First. So that's what they used. And the local Santa Cruz police not only had a relationship with these informants, but if anyone's from Santa Cruz, you might remember Officer, I guess he's sheriff, so he must be Deputy Hartzner. And he was like all buddy-buddy with all the activists. We called him Officer Beach Bum when we met him. He had this kind of sun-bleached hair and all tousled and everything. And he was like all cool hanging around the students. And, well, what he was doing was he was hanging around, of course, was he was spying on people. And they collected a list of the key Earth First activists and other groups, PETA and, you know, whatever, different environmental groups. And this was not a list of people who advocated sabotage. This was not a list of people who engaged in crimes or were suspected of engaging in crime. This was a list of public Earth First activists, period. So they collected this list of activists, and they did this thing that they called Operation Peace Day. Now, if they had been more clever, they would have called it the Peace Night Action Group. But what it was that the Earth Night Action Group dropped the power lines on the night of Earth Day. So they decided in their little brains that on Peace Day, which was May 18th, there was going to be another act of terrorism. So this is what the Peace Night Action Group was supposed to do. They took about 12 officers, I believe it was, and each one of them was assigned one or maybe a couple of Earth Firsters or other environmental activists. It could be more than one if they lived in the same house. And this officer's assignment was to keep track of those activists and know where they live and know if they move and know where they work and know their goings on. Officer or Sheriff Deputy Hartzner testified that he parked outside Karen DeBrawl's house and surveilled it and stuff like that. That was a house where there were a lot of Earth Firsters living. So these officers were each assigned an Earth Firster and required to keep track of their whereabouts and their comings and going and where they live. And they were each given a beeper. And they were informed that when this act of terrorism occurred, they would be beeped, and they were to immediately drop what they were doing and go to the house of their assigned activist so they could see who wasn't home. Okay? So that was Operation Peace Day, which, I mean, I call it Operation Palmer Raids. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, for them to be doing that to people simply because they are exercising their free speech activities, this is exactly what the Attorney General guidelines was meant to prevent. Now, when the time came, there was no act of terrorism on May 18th. However, there was one on May 24th. That was the one where I was almost killed. And the FBI, who was working in the Operation Peace Day network, immediately paged the officer Hartner, Sheriff Hartner, who beeped all the Operation Peace Night guys, and they rushed out to the houses. And Karen DeBrawl and all the Santa Cruz activists had never been able to figure out how come the police arrived at their door within a half hour of the time that I was bombed, and how come they all heard about the bombing from the police. And we now know the answer, and the answer is absolutely illegal, I believe, should be illegal at any rate, but immoral kind of surveillance of people engaged in free speech activities. Well, along those lines, since they decided that Earth First was the Earth Night Action Group, you know, they deny now. We've deposed 50 FBI agents and Oakland police. It's been a very interesting experience. And they have all testified that they never heard of us, that they weren't investigating Earth First, that the Santa Cruz investigation was not focusing on Earth First. But, of course, that's not true. So the bridge climb that I referred to, the climbing of the Golden Gate Bridge to hang a banner, well, the Earth Night Action Group dropped these power lines, but what Earth First was going to do for Earth Day was hang a banner, another terrorist event. And for the benefit of Paul Watson, who, those of you who know, he wrote an editorial about how wimpy banner hangings are, I have in my hand an FBI document in which they label that banner hanging a domestic security terrorism event. So much for wimpy banner hangers. We have a terrorist banner hanging right here in our midst. And so this was the day after the power lines. Now, there's no reason in the world for the FBI to respond to this banner hanging, but sure enough they did. John Conway, Special Agent John Conway, shows up, subject, civil disobedience at the Golden Gate Bridge. Now, what right do they have to even cover this stuff? During the pre-dawn hours of April 24th, 1990, individuals
ascended the cables within 10 feet of the top of the North Tower of the Golden Gate Bridge. These individuals attempted to unfurl a banner that said, "Save the planet, Earth first," and they even put the exclamation point, which they usually don't. Iron workers from the bridge district had to climb the cables to go after the demonstrators because doors to the elevators that run inside the towers had been glued shut. Subsequent to the arrest of these individuals, the California Highway Patrol inventoried the individuals' vehicles. They did it with the Oakland police and made available the written material found in these vehicles. Materials found in what is believed to be Daryl Cherney's backpack indicated that the group is publicizing what they are referring to as a Mississippi summer in the Redwoods. The brochures point out that the group is recruiting migrants from all around the country. Well, you know, they heard about the labor coalition and they got carried away. Anyway, we're recruiting migrants from all around the country to come to Sonoma, Mendocino, Humboldt County area of Northern California to help stop the logging of the redwood trees. The group advises what to bring and that they will provide campsites to which individuals will be assigned. Well, so now that they know about the big secret terrorist event, Redwood Summer, John Conway, Special Agent John Conway, then contacts the Humboldt County Sheriff. And this is interesting the way he words this. Contact with the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office indicates. He doesn't say he initiated the contact, but in fact he did. And you can tell by the double, you know, the kind of the vague language, but also the Humboldt Sheriff has testified that he did. And, of course, they always tell the truth, too, right? But anyway, well, Conway doesn't recall, okay? They don't recall anything. You can't believe how bad these guys' memories is. Anyway, so the Humboldt Sheriff is monitoring the concept of a Mississippi summer through literature attributed to Earth First. The Humboldt Sheriff Office has established a liaison with the federal, state, and county agencies to coordinate the investigation of any crimes committed in Humboldt County attributed to the Mississippi summer. And then this is it, then it, they assign leads. These are the leads. The leads are that the FBI will maintain contact with Detective Rodney Lester of Humboldt Sheriff's Office and with Detective Steve Satterwhite of Mendocino County Sheriff's Office. So this is before the bombing. This is May 18th, 1990. The FBI has set up a liaison to monitor the declared public nonviolent events of Redwood Summer, again, which they have no right whatsoever to monitor. But this isn't labeled an investigation of Earth First. This is captioned to the Earth Night Action Group. Okay, so under the pretense of investigating that, they, of course, are investigating us. And, once again, this is labeled as a terrorist event. They have a code, 100A, that means terrorism. So that's taking me a long time to learn to read these files. They sure are fascinating when you know. Anyway, so with that in mind, now you can see what they're doing is they're constructing this model of Earth First as a terrorist organization. And I have to say, after interviewing 50 of them, some of them seem to believe their own propaganda. Some of them are coldly cynical. But some of them actually seem to believe it. And when you realize that they themselves are being fed misinformation by their other FBI agents, then you can see how this thing kind of escalates and they just get the ball rolling and let it take off by itself. So on May 24th, when I was bombed, the FBI was there immediately. In fact, the FBI terrorist squad was there immediately. And we were trying to figure out, how did they get there so soon? Well, this is the very first memo from the FBI at the scene. While returning from a lunch hour effort to locate an apron for the use by his child in a school play, at approximately 12:10 p.m., Special Agent McKinley heard a radio report of a car bombing, and he just got right over there. So it was only for the fortuitous event of looking for this apron, you know, family values. Anyway, but there was part of this document that's been crossed out for 3 years since we got it, and we just got it uncrossed out in the last batch of stuff that we got back from our motion to compel. Now, these guys have testified, and this goes to the core of our case. They say, oh, we didn't arrest them because they were Earth Firsters that we were trying to discredit. We arrested them because we honestly believed from the evidence that we saw that they had bombed themselves. And maybe we were mistaken. That's okay. If they were mistaken, they can't be sued. They have to have lied to be sued. They said, well, maybe it was a mistake. But at the time, we had never heard of Judy and Daryl. We had no investigation of Earth First. And we just believed the evidence pointed that way, so we made the arrest. And every one of them, without exception, has testified to that. So this is what the uncrossed out part says. Special Agent McKinley checked with Special Agent George and was advised that Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney were the subjects of an FBI investigation in the terrorist field, and that additional FBI agents from the terrorist squad in San Francisco were en route to the bombing scene. So that's how early this document is, and here they are saying that we are the subjects of a terrorist investigation. But the next day, there's one from Special Agent Sachtleben, who advises that members of Earth First are suspected as being responsible for the sabotage of power lines in Northern California. So again, they're saying out of the one hand, side of their mouth, we're just investigating crimes, we're not targeting Earth First, but on the other, in fact, they are. So now that what they're trying to do, they say, well, we were going to Santa Cruz, you know, so we must have been planning to blow up something in Santa Cruz. Particularly, they say, we must have been transporting this bomb to Santa Cruz to blow up some power lines with, this motion-triggered bomb under my car seat. So in the first document that they wrote to headquarters, again, had several crossed-out parts that we just recently got uncrossed out. And these are the parts that they uncrossed out. It is noted that Berry and Cherney have been... Oh, this part was not. I'm just going to give you this for background. It is noted that Berry and Cherney have been in the news recently because of their involvement with Mississippi Redwood Summer, an event sponsored in part by Earth First. So, you know, they're already monitoring Redwood Summer under their terrorist investigation, so that must be proof that we're terrorists. But now this is the part they just uncrossed out. San Francisco notes that Berry and Cherney were already considered potential suspects in the Earth Night Action Group, which involved the destruction of Pacific Gas and Electric Power Tower in Santa Cruz County. Well, we weren't anywhere near Santa Cruz when this happened, you know, and they know that perfectly well. I mean, we were very public, our activities were very public, and, you know, but nonetheless, that doesn't matter. We were potential suspects. And that we had, and we were indeed on our way to Santa Cruz. And then the last paragraph that we just got uncrossed out is even worse. It says, and this is the memo reporting the bombing to headquarters, San Francisco is coordinating with ATF regarding ATF investigations of criminal acts possibly committed by members of Earth First in Wyoming, Portland, and Washington State. Now, the only thing I can figure that they are talking about is, at least in the, I don't know what it is in Wyoming, but I know that in Portland and Washington State, there were investigations of ALF actions. So what the FBI has done here is concocted this idea of Earth First as this kind of master criminal organization that controls the puppet strings of ALF and Earth Night Action Group and all this stuff. So they've created this fantasy of us as this kind of overreaching terrorist group, and mere association with Earth First in their minds is now grounds to consider you a terrorist. At any rate, so once they've done this, of course, they respond to the crime scene, and what we are alleging in our lawsuit is that they arrested us not because the evidence showed it. The evidence showed the exact opposite. They arrested us in order to discredit us as terrorists, in order to isolate and neutralize Earth First and destroy what we stand for, as J. Edgar would put it. So, and that's the core of our lawsuit. That's the core charge. We're charging them with false arrests and civil rights violations, including violating our First Amendment rights by using the tactics of COINTELPRO, and we use that word, which has supposedly been disbanded, using the tactics of COINTELPRO to try to discredit us and therefore make us not be able to effectively speak. So this COINTELPRO continued throughout the investigation, of course. As Karen mentioned, there was no investigation of the bombing. There was an investigation of Earth First. The investigation of, it included things like, instead of looking for the bomber, yeah, once again, Special Agent John Conway, he was the case agent. And Special Agent John Conway wrote this little memo that said that intelligence has revealed that Judy Berry has a hideout outside Willits, where she lives, with no electricity. This hideout, of course, is my home, where I live with my children. And they directed the FBI to work with the Mendocino County Sheriffs to find my hideout, which they also described as a safe house. And they spent quite a bit of effort, and they had a great tip, they said, and don't forget to check with the propane company to see if they deliver well. We live so far out in the boonies, we don't even get propane delivered. We got to haul our own. So they were unable to find us by the propane. And it took them several months, but they proudly found our address and reported it. But anyway, what's very interesting about this operation of, I mean, you know, by this time, this is months after the bombing, it's clear I'm not the bomber. And my home is not particularly that secret. The FBI could have found it out. But what's very interesting about this investigation of how to, of where my home is, my hideout, is that in the course of it, they record a tip that they received. And it says, somebody identifying himself as Martin Van Buren called and said that Judy Barry lives 3.5 miles up String Creek Road, blah, 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 and gave some directions. Well, 1 week after this appears in the FBI files, I got a death threat. And this is the only death threat that I got after the bombing. And it said, Barry, get out of Willits. And it said, the hippies up String Creek Road have built a hideout for Judy Barry. We don't want world headquarters for Earth First. And the world headquarters was in the tip, too. We don't want world headquarters for Earth First in Willits. And they gave the exact same directions that were given in the FBI file. Now, of course, they got their asses covered because they say, well, maybe the same person who called in the tip, Martin Van Buren, might have written the death threat. But it's certainly very suspicious, and it certainly makes you wonder what they were up to, especially since when we tried to turn in this death threat to the Mendocino sheriff who helped the very same one, by the way, who, for those of you who know the story, when I was getting death threats and I went to the sheriff and said, you know, help me, and they said, we don't have the manpower to investigate. If you turn up dead, we'll investigate. That was Sergeant Steve Satterwhite, the same one who was the liaison to Special Agent Conway before Redwood Summer, and he was the one who helped try to find my hippie shack. So, so we took the death threat to the Mendocino County Sheriff's, who disappeared it, and it's never been seen again, and the FBI denies ever having seen it, even though the Willits police testify that they gave it to the FBI. So, that's the kind of investigation that they did. It's certainly suspicious, and the biggest piece of the investigation that was the worst, it would take me all night to describe the whole investigation, was that at a certain point, about a year after the bombing, they wrote this memo and they said, we have learned that certain people in Earth First associate with each other to the point of getting arrested together. Apparently, they've never heard of an affinity group. And they said, so we are going to catalog the phone calls of these people. And they came up with 13 people, or 14 people. Now, we don't know who these 14 people are because they won't tell us. Okay, and they won't tell us how they selected them, but this is one of the things we've made a motion to compel, and we're hoping to get back in the next couple weeks or months from the courts. At any rate, but we can figure out by the phone numbers who the people are, and who they are is the people who climbed the Golden Gate Bridge plus me. Makes 14. Okay, so this is very interesting because the only thing these people have done is a nonviolent civil disobedience action, and yet what the FBI does is they catalog all of our out-of-state phone calls for a two-month period around the bombing. The bombing happened in California, Northern California. Every related event happened in Northern California. But they didn't catalog our phone calls to 707-415-510, didn't exist yet, or 408. Those are all the area codes that would have been involved in these events they're supposedly investigating. They only cataloged our out-of-area, out-of-state calls. And they came up with 634 phone calls that we had made, and they then investigated every single one of these people for the crime of receiving a phone call from an Earth Firster who had committed no crime. You got investigated, including, I have hundreds of pages of this. They list people's names, addresses, physical descriptions, places of employment, criminal records, and in some cases, political associates. So, I mean, this is what they did instead of looking for the bomber. And, of course, Special Agent John Conway signed each of these memos, but he claims to remember nothing about it. For a year and a half, he says he has no memory of signing these. Yes, that is his signature. He doesn't know why this was conducted. He doesn't know what the results were. He doesn't know anything about it. Nonetheless, that's what the FBI did instead of investigating the bombing. And this is exactly the kind of broad-based surveillance of activists that is forbidden by the Attorney General guidelines. So that's the kind of stuff that they do. And this phony event. Oh, actually, I have one more thing I got to do on the phony. Just, you know, Karen said some is funny and some is serious. I'm focusing on the funny tonight. I just got to tell you about the behavioral science unit because they're my favorite. The behavioral science unit, they're the ones who analyzed the Unabomber manifesto and came up with the personality profile of who the Unabomber is and all that stuff. So by August, they still haven't found the bomber yet, so they decide they're going to ask the behavioral science unit to enter into the fray. So first, they're going to give the behavioral science unit a little description of us so that they'll know kind of where to go with this. Now, by this time, it's quite obvious that I didn't bomb myself. They know they're not going to float this lie anymore. And so this is what they say about me. Barry's educational background is unclear. They got that right. however, she maintains an active role as a leader in the Industrial Workers of the World, IWW, a.k.a. Wobblies, and is a major leader in the environmental movement in Northern California. Barry is reported to be an accomplished musician, fiddle and guitar. She had recently broken off an intimate relationship with Daryl Cherney. Now, we get to Daryl. Daryl professes to be a musician, guitar and singing. However, his talents are not highly regarded by his associates. Poor Daryl, you know. I mean, it's, you should reverse those two if you want to know the truth. Anyway, and they said his views on environmental protests had been more extreme than others, evidenced by his arrest for climbing the Golden Gate Bridge in protest of Earth Day. He didn't climb no bridge, by the way. Evidenced by him making press calls about other people climbing the bridge. Anyway, so then they have a third one. Mike Sweeney is my ex-husband. Although Michael Emmett Sweeney was not a victim, nor even at the scene of the May 24th, 1990 bombing, his background information is provided for reference. So, you know, we're just going to lead you along a little bit here because they decided that either my ex-boyfriend or my ex-husband did. This couldn't possibly be political. I mean, you know, people don't assassinate women. They just kill them for personal and sexual reasons. So anyway, so they are asked to analyze the Lord's Avenger letter, for people who don't know, a raving letter from an alleged religious fanatic that described the bomb in exact detail. That is a total fake, this letter, I now believe. And to decide who they think that could have written this letter or made this bomb. And I'm not going to read you the whole thing because it's long and stupid, kind of like the Unabomber's Manifesto. In fact, you know, I wanted to see if the Unabomber Manifesto typewriter matched the Lord's Avenger letter. Because I certainly know that his style matches that of the behavioral science unit. At any rate... But, I mean, you notice that he had no training in the history of science or in, you know, radical environmentalism, but he knew all about social psychology. Anyway, so if we want to cast aspersions, we can do it, too. And if there's an FBI agent, as there probably is in this audience, they're probably writing that down right now and bringing it back to the behavioral science unit for their next great revelation. At any rate, so this kind of disinformation, this COINTELPRO continues to this day, not just in the much more familiar Unabomber charges, but also in my case, because these things that I told you that we just got uncrossed out, these were crossed out. They have to tell you why they're crossing something out. And the code they crossed them out was investigation still in progress. There's no investigation still in progress. So they withheld these things from us illegally. And they lied to us in the depositions. They lied under oath. They said they never heard of us. They said they weren't investigating us. And here's their own documents that say differently. And they also lied to Congress. Congress had sent them a bunch of questions, a congressional committee, and they said in their answers, never heard of Judy Barry. The only thing we know about Daryl Cherney is he got arrested at the Golden Gate Bridge, and we're not investigating Earth First. So their own documents that they've withheld from us all this time contradict that. So we filed a second lawsuit against them last month, charging them with a cover-up in the first lawsuit. And we've charged them with lying under oath. Okay. I bet you didn't read about this in the San Francisco Chronicle, did you? They were too busy covering our alleged link to the Unabomber to write about this. The Examiner covered it in an article about this big, but the Chronicle, KPFA, it got covered on Flashpoints, but not on the news. I mean, you know, Free Radio Berkeley covered it. Anyway, so, I mean, you know, the blackout is pretty stunning and is still going on, the complicity of the news media. But, you know, we charged them with that. We charged them with disappearing documents. They've disappeared tons of documents. There's all these, you know, the numbers. We learned how to read this complicated numbering system. We discovered that every number was crossed out and a new number was written in. And the new numbers had a lot less numbers than the old numbers. So we said, well, what's going on? What's this about? And they testified under oath, oh, we had an incompetent rotor clerk. Blame the woman, right? We had to fire her because she was incompetent. We said, okay, fine. Then we would like the name of the incompetent rotor clerk, and we'd like the name of her replacement so that we can depose them both.
And they said, nope, we won't give it to you. So that's another thing that we've charged them with, is that in the cover-up. We've charged them with lying under oath, including unreasonable loss of memory. Special Agent Hemgee tested... Special Agent Hemgee, in a four-hour deposition, testified, I don't recall, 97 times, okay? So, and we even threw in the Unabomber charges in this new lawsuit, and we said that they have continued this... this COINTELPRO in the Unabomber case. And I need to say just a couple things more about the Unabomber, and then I'm going to get out of here so that we can hear some more music. What I want to say about the Unabomber case is that there's several reasons why they would do this. One of them, of course, is obviously the continuation of the very long-standing COINTELPRO against Earth First attempting to falsely associate us with bombs. Okay, that one's very clear. But there's another reason, and that reason is I believe that it is at least partially a legal strategy in my own lawsuit, because the man who leaked the information, apparently, to ABC News, the reason I'm saying apparently is ABC News won't admit that it was him, but he went on television with them and said half of the stuff. He didn't say Earth First. He said radical environmentalists, and they let ABC News said Earth First, okay? And when I called ABC News and said, what's the source of that? Is this wise use guy who's so discredited? They said, no, it's the FBI. It's someone from the FBI familiar with the Unabom case. Well, Rick Smith is from the San Francisco branch, and he was the spokesperson for the Unabomber Task Force. And he was also a spokesperson against me in my case. I have a clip from him where he says the reason they couldn't solve the bombing case is because the victims refused to cooperate. There's an even funnier one. They said, you get to ask them these things called interrogatories. It's like 20 questions, you know, except you get 30 of them. So one of the questions was, oh, and you do these things called admissions. And we said, admit that you never even compared Judy and Daryl's fingerprints to the fingerprints that you found on bomb-related materials. And the FBI answered, the reason we never compared Judy and Daryl's fingerprints is because they refused to give us their fingerprints. We were under arrest. I was unconscious when they took my fingerprints. So anyway, that's the kind of crap that we get from them, and we sued them for that kind of answer. So, at any rate, so Rick Smith is the first connection, and Rick Smith, interestingly, resigned from the FBI on March 31st, 5 days before the Unabomber was caught. That meant he was already under surveillance. And there was an article in the Examiner about his resignation. When he resigned, his title was Chief of Counterintelligence for the San Francisco branch. And here's this raving Hooverite who lamented how sad it was that we ended the Cold War. We won the war, but, you know, we lost the enemy. The thrill had gone out of it. And he lamented the lost days of J. Edgar. So this is Rick Smith, who was recently confronted on KQED over this crap. But at any rate, so he, I think, is the original source. And interestingly, he just resigned, so he's not an FBI agent. So when a few responsible reporters called the FBI and said, what's this about the FBI having Ted Kaczynski's name in an investigation of Earth First, the official FBI line was, oh, no, there's no direct connection. But Rick Smith, recently retired, set the ball rolling and then stepped back and let it roll on its own. And interestingly, once we killed the story in some of the mainstream papers that had fact-checking departments, the story re-emerged in the right-wing columns that are not subject to fact-checking. But I would need to say something else about the Unabomber. The case agent for the Unabomber Task Force was none other than Special Agent John Conway, the very same person who did all those things I just named. The case agent for my case was the case agent for the Unabomber case. This guy was one of the most ideological right-wing nut wackos, as they would call them, that we deposed. He would not give it up that we were the bomber. He would not give it up that Earth First was a terrorist group, despite anything he found. Well, if you want to know why it took them so long to make an arrest in the Unabomber case, it's probably because John Conway, who as case agent gets to decide which leads to follow and not to follow, was too busy following around Stephen Dunifer and Gar Smith to investigate any bombings. And then there's one other link also, and that's Don Sachtleben. He's the guy who searched the Unabomber cabin for 3 days. And he was also one of the evidence guys in my case who participated in the evidence fraud, including deciding not to send the back seat or the allegedly matching nails to the lab at all. Okay, so there's at least three direct links between my case and the Unabomber case, and John Conway is a named defendant. The other two are unindicted co-conspirators. Their names are mentioned, but they're not sued. So still, the FBI is America's political police and always has been.
And that was Judy Berry speaking May 18, 1996, in Berkeley, California, one of her very last speeches about the car bombing and her federal civil rights lawsuit against the FBI and Oakland police. There will be a series of events to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the bombing of Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney, 10 years later, still unsolved. First, on May 19th, there'll be an event called Targets of COINTELPRO at Ashkenaz in Berkeley. The program begins at 7:30 with music at 9:30, featuring Jose Lopez, a Puerto Rican independence movement leader from Chicago, Alicia Rodriguez, former Puerto Rican POW, John Trudell, Native American poet, and Geronimo Gijaga Pratt, who 3 years ago was released, former Black Panther leader who was in prison for 26 years for a crime the FBI knew he did not commit. Also Karen Pickett of Earth First, and there will be video of Judy Berry speaking about the case. Also music by The Coup and Rebecca Riots, Daryl Cherney, Company of Prophets, and Jello Biafra. Then on May 24th, the anniversary, the 10th anniversary of the bombing of Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney, join Utah Phillips, Art and Revolution, puppeteers, and dozens of fiddlers on the steps of the FBI headquarters, where we're going to fiddle down the FBI Wednesday, May 24th, 11:30 in the morning at the San Francisco Federal Building, 450 Golden Gate in San Francisco. If you want to participate as a fiddler or in any other way, you can call Redwood Summer Justice Project at 415-648-4505 or 707-887-0262. My name is Alicia Littletree, and thanks for listening. This has been Truth to Power.